Decided to do a lesson also about figures of speech, because one of the common confusions in reading the Bible is understanding when figures of speech are being used. Now, it might seem a bit odd if you think about it, because all languages in the world contain figures of speech. There is not a language out there that does not have such things. And you would think that people would understand what figures of speech were and when they were there. Statements have a literal meaning, are said to be figurative when someone doesn't like or believe what the literal meaning is. That's what a lot of people do. They'll read through the Bible, well, that can't be true. And so therefore it must be figurative. For example, Genesis 1 talks about the creation. And it says that the creation happened in 6 days. And on the seventh day, God rested. It even says evening and morning was the first day, and evening and morning was the second day, and so forth, going down. Well, today people say, well, it has to be evolution. So therefore, Genesis 1 must be in figurative language. It's not because there's indication that figurative language is being used, but rather that people decide it doesn't match their belief, and so therefore they have to find some way to discount what's there. Sometimes statements with figurative meaning are said to be literal if it happens to match a favored doctrine. For example, in Revelation 20 and verse 4, it speaks about Christ's thousand-year reign. Well, that's a very popular belief, that Christ is going to literally reign for 1,000 years on the earth. And so, despite the fact that Revelation says at the very beginning of it, it is in symbolic language, that particular passage is declared to be literal, because it matches what people want. And statements with figurative meaning are sometimes assigned just arbitrary meaning so they can support a particular doctrine that people like. Oftentimes, this is done with prophetic statements that are full of symbols, such as Revelation. It's amazing how many things are proven by Revelation. I was going through a document that Tanya gave me that had preterist views, and it cites Revelation a lot of times because there's symbols there, and so one can then basically assign almost whatever one feels like if they just say, well, this is symbolic. But it's not honest biblical interpretation to call something figurative simply because you don't understand it or you don't want to believe it. There are actually rules in place about what are figures of speech and when they apply and what kind there are. To understand this a little bit better, we need to understand what is a figure of speech. See, prior to modern styles, before we had typesetting, when everybody had to write things out by hand, you know, things like bold and italics, underlined, superscripts, subscripts, things like that, if a text was to call attention to itself, that's how we today mark it up. We use bold letters, we put it in italics, we underline it, we change the color of the font, so that we can make it more noticeable. Well, back in the older days, in order to do this, they used figuratives of speech. And we still do. Because it's really hard. Well, I guess you could, for bold, you could shout. But it's kind of hard to speak italics. You know, it's kind of hard to get all the possibilities to do emphasis other than with tone of voice. And so we still use figures of speech when we speak. We still use it when we write. And the purpose still remains the same, is to put emphasis on the text, on certain points in the text. Now, a figure of speech is just basically a departure from the usual rules of grammar or the word choice that would normally happen, and then that becomes a figure of speech. You just, what you would normally do, you just kind of break the rules a little bit, and that becomes a figure of speech. It's the departure that becomes important because it calls attention to itself. Because you can't just read by it and just let it go. Because it's not what you expect. For example, let's take a look at Ephesians chapter 3. Ephesians chapter 3. There's actually a couple figures of speech in here, but we're just going to point out one of them. Ephesians chapter 3 and verse 18. It says, I'll start with verse 17. So that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may be able to comprehend all with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of Christ, which surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled up with all the fullness of God. Now take a look at verse 18 again. That you may comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth. There's one of them is because we've got a whole bunch of ands in there. But if you stop and think for a moment, wait a minute, there's only three dimensions. He just listed out four. How can you get four dimensions out of three? It's a figure of speech. It makes you stop and say, well, wait a minute. But he wants to emphasize that particular point. And he emphasizes it in two different ways. One with a bunch of ands, but another one is by adding extra dimension. Now take a look at Isaiah 49. Isaiah 49. And verse 13. It says, shout for joy, O heavens, and rejoice, O earth. Break forth into joyful shouting, O mountains. For the Lord has comforted his people and will have compassion on his afflicted. Now, wait a minute. How do heavens and earth and mountains shout or sing, depending on your translation? I've walked up several mountains. I have yet to hear one shout. Maybe I'm not heavy enough. I don't know. The earth, things. So wait a minute, this doesn't match what we know about the physical universe. It's a figure of speech. It's to get a point across. And it calls our attention to the text. The Greeks went through and made an art, or actually a science, of figures of speech. They went through and classified them. They came up with 200 different types of figures of speech. We're not going to go through them all. But they came up with names for 200 different types of figures of speech. And here's one of the points that I want you to take note of as we go through some of these, because we'll just give you some ideas about some of them. If there is a figure of speech being used, I can classify it. I should be able to put a name to it. I should be able to classify what kind of figure of speech it is. You can't just say, well, that's a figure of speech and just arbitrarily say it. You need to know what kind it is. So let's just look at some of them. Some of them are actually named in the Bible. Take a look at Genesis 4. I'm sorry, Galatians 4. Galatians chapter 4. Galatians chapter 4, and in verse 24, it says, this is allegorically speaking. For these women are two covenants, one proceeding from Mount Sinai, bearing children who are the slaves. She is Hagar, and it goes on to talk about it. But notice it says, this is an allegory. An allegory is a type of figure of speech. Over in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 21. Get my eyes to work. There we go. Corresponding to that, baptism now saves you, not the removal of dirt from the flesh, but an appeal to God for a good conscience. My version says corresponding. Some version says in like figure, or this is an antitype. That's a type of figure of speech. One contrasted to another. One that leads to another. In Romans chapter 5 and verse 14. Romans chapter 5. And in verse 14. It says, nevertheless, death reigned from Adam until Moses, even over those who had not sinned, in the likeness of the offense of Adam, who is a type of him to come. Now, we had an anti-type, and now we hear this one is a type. They're both different types of figures of speech. And it also says, in likeness, which is similitude. It's another figure of speech. So there's two figures of speech being named in this passage. In Hebrews chapter 11, and in verse 19, it says, he considered that God is able to raise people from the dead, from which he also received them back as a type. Again, we have the word type in my translation. It's actually a different classification as in the Greek. It's a parable. It's not to be confused with the parables. That's another one. But parable, with it, B-O-L-E, which is another figure of speech. Of course, Jesus talks about in Matthew chapter 13 about the parables. We've read that several times. Matthew chapter 13, verse 13, and also 34 to 35, that he spoke in parables. That's a figure of speech. And one last one in Revelation, which I mentioned a little bit earlier, Revelation 1 and verse 1, it says, the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave to him to show to his servants the things which must soon take place, he sent and communicated it by his angel to his bondservant John. And it continues on. But that word that my translation says communicated is a word for signs or symbols, to say that this is written in signs or signify. So again, the question then says, okay, we know the Bible has figures of speech. It says it has figures of speech. It names several of them. So how do we recognize a figure of speech? Well, in general, when you're reading the Bible, you take it as literal as possible. But when the literal doesn't make sense, you start to sit back and think whether figurative speech is being used. For instance, going to Isaiah again. Isaiah 55. And in verse 12. It says, for you will go out with joy and be led forth with peace. The mountain and hills will break forth into shouts of joy before you. And the trees of the field will clap their hands. We again have, you know, mountains and hills don't shout for joy or sing, depending on your translation. Trees don't have hands, let alone clap. This is a figure of speech. We understand what it's trying to say. All creation is happy. Everybody's happy. Everybody's praising God. But that's a figure of speech. This is how to get our attention. Or 2 Corinthians chapter 11. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, and in verse 16, Paul says here, again I say, let no one think me foolish. But if you do, receive me even as foolish, so that I may boast a little. What I am saying, I am not saying as the Lord would, but as in foolishness, in this confidence of boasting. Since many boast according to the flesh, I will boast also. For you, being so wise, tolerate the foolish gladly. If you tolerate it, if anyone enslaves you, anyone devours you, anyone takes advantage of you, anyone exalts himself, anyone hits you in the face, to my shame I must say that we have been weak by comparison. Now, basically, Paul's saying, I'm a fool. I'm being foolish. Well, you read through Paul's writings, and Paul's anything but a fool. Peter says that some things that Paul says are kind of hard to understand. It's because of the depth of his meanings. So what do we have here? Paul's saying he's foolish. Well, he's being satirical. He's using sarcasm, a figure of speech, to get a point across. So one way that we take note of it is when the literal doesn't make sense. Now, we got to be careful with it, that we don't say it doesn't make sense just because I don't want to believe it. But when it doesn't match the world, doesn't make sense, that's one flag to say, well, wait, maybe a figure of speech is being used here. Another time we notice figure of speech is when there's more that appears to be communicated than what's actually said. Okay, parables are that type of figure of speech. Let's go back to Matthew 13. I mentioned it earlier, but now we're going to actually read it. Matthew 13, verse 33. He says that he spoke another parable to them. The kingdom of heaven is like leaven, which a woman took and hid in 3 pecks of flour until it was all leavened. And if you read this statement literally, is it true? The answer is yes. Those are the kind of things that people do. To leaven, you know, make bread, you put some leaven into it and set it aside until it starts to rise. Okay. Now, Jesus does give a hint saying he's speaking in a parable. But even if you just took that statement and you read through it and you say, okay, where's the point? There obviously is more here than what Jesus is just saying, because he says the kingdom of heaven is like this. There's some depth here that the literal meaning right on the surface is not covering. There's a figure of speech going on. Now, sometimes we find figures of speech when the grammar or the structure of the statement emphasizes something. Let's go to Genesis 2. Genesis chapter 2, verse 17. It says, but from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat from it you will surely die. Now, most of your English translations don't pick this up, because the Hebrew actually says literally, dying you shall die. That's what it literally says in Hebrew. In dying, you shall die. Well, that's, I think, the way most people die. The repeat of the two words is an indication we got something more being emphasized. It's trying to get you. That's why it's the New American Standard says you will surely die. Something's being emphasized here. Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 5. And again, the English loses something in the translation. But in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, and verses 6 through 9. 2 Corinthians 5, we're going to start with verse 6. It says, therefore, being always of good courage, and knowing that while we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord. For we walk by faith and not by sight. We are of good courage, I say, and prefer rather to be absent from the body and to be home with the Lord. Therefore, we also have as our ambition, whether at home or absent, to be pleasing to Him. Now, you look through it, okay, we got, you know, being at home and being absent. We got something that's being compared. And that's a pretty good translation of it. But actually, if you look at it in Greek, it's a play on words. Because endomeo is being in your own country. Ectomeo, just changing one letter, means being out of your own country. And so when he's talking, he's flip-flopping between two very similar Greek words, and he's basically doing a play on words between those two. The ones that play with the grammar structure, the ones that play with words and things like that, that's really hard to translate into another language. And so for a lot of these types of figures of speech, they're generally lost when they get translated. It's kind of difficult to get it. When you got to play on words, and English doesn't have one letter apart difference in words of the same set of words, it's just kind of hard to translate it and get the same feel for it. So let's take a look at some of the figures of speech. We'll see how much we can get through to tonight. Again, I'm not going to try doing all of them, but I just wanted you to see the different types that are available and may appear in your translations. One set of figures of speech is generally known as omissions. Something's left out. For instance, a word is missing that grammar requires ought to be there. For example, we're going to look at Matthew 11, verse 18. Matthew 11, and in verse 18. It says, for John came neither eating nor drinking, and they said he has a demon. Well, stop and think about it for a moment. How many people don't eat or drink? Okay, if you take it literally, it said John came not eating or drinking. Okay, something was left out. And what Jesus is, and by leaving it out, it puts emphasis on it. John wasn't here to party. He declined to attend parties or things like that, where there was a lot of eating and drinking, the feasting going on. By leaving it out, it puts emphasis on it. You know what he was talking about, but he just doesn't say it. Okay. Sometimes we, instead of leaving out a word or a phrase, what's left out is the meaning or the sense of a word. Let me show you this in Acts chapter 5. Acts chapter 5 and verse 36. It says, for some time ago, Theudas rose up claiming to be somebody, and a group of about 400 men joined up with him. But he was killed, and all who followed him were dispersed and came to nothing. Now think about it. Theudas rose up to claim to be somebody. Well, aren't most of us somebody? I think all of us are somebody. Something was left out. And what's being stated here is basically a lessening or an understating of what Theudas was doing. By claiming to be somebody, what we're really saying, he's claiming to be somebody who's great. We left that out. But it was just by saying claiming to be somebody, it actually lowers it, but we understand it was a greater statement. Let's go to Psalms 84 and verse 11. Psalms 84 and verse 11. For the Lord God is a sun and a shield. The Lord gives grace and glory. No good thing does he withhold from those who walk uprightly. Now notice it says no good thing is withheld. I thought we're not supposed to use double negatives. But that emphasis on the negative makes us understand that God gives us every good thing. So it's using a negative to emphasize a positive. So those are the types of things. We're either missing words or we're leaving out some sense of meaning or lowering a sense of meaning. Now another type of figure of speech is when we add words. Words that are not necessary to get the point across. Let's go to Isaiah 40. Isaiah 40, and in verse 1, comfort, O comfort my people, says the your God. Notice the two comforts. That's the duplicate word there gives the double comfort at the beginning of that statement is to give emphasis that he's wanting badly to comfort. So there's a way of basically emphasizing or underlining it by doubling the word. Take a look at John 1 and verse 51. John 1 and verse 51 is Jesus saying, he said to him, truly, truly, I say to you that you will see the heavens open and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. Now notice the beginning. Truly, truly. Isn't one truly enough? But by repeating it, it puts emphasis. This is really true. Okay, so that's one type. Another one is where we duplicate the start of sentences. So let's take a look at Matthew chapter 5. We won't take time to read all these, but it's the Beatitudes. We know those. And they all start out, starting with verse 3, Matthew 5, verse 3. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are, blessed are, blessed are. It makes a list with bullet points, only with their words. Okay. It captures your attention, and you see each point very crisply being presented. Not only can you do that at the beginning, you can also do it at the end. Take a look at Psalms 115. Psalms 115, and we're going to start with verse 9. O Israel, trust in the Lord. He is their help and their shield. O house of Aaron, trust in the Lord. He is their help and their shield. You who fear the Lord, trust in the Lord. He is their help and their shield. The ending, each one, again, it makes a list. And it puts emphasis on it. We got people that need to trust in God. Now we already noted one, but let's take another example of one where ands are. We got more ands than we need. In Acts chapter 1 verse 8. He said, but you will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you shall be my witnesses both in Jerusalem and in all Judea and in Samaria and even to the remotest part of the earth. Those ands put an emphasis on it's going to go here, and there and there. It's spreading. It's putting emphasis on those the places where it's going to. Yeah, we could have just dropped the ants and just said each one, but this puts more extra emphasis at the on the thing, things that are being said. Another one in Romans chapter 8. And by the way, each one of these have Greek words that go with them, and I can't pronounce the Greek well enough, so I'm skipping over the fancy names. Romans chapter 8, and in verse 38. For I am convinced that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principles, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor any other created thing will be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. Here instead we got a lot of extra ands, we got a lot of extra nors. So neither this, nor this, nor this, nor this, nor this. Again, we could have got by with just a few of them, but it helps emphasize each of the points. Now, Ephesians chapter 6, we've seen a couple where we repeated the same word, like comfort, O comfort, my people. Sometimes they repeat the same type of word, but they put it in different forms. So the same word, basic word, the base word is being repeated, but it's in a different form. In Ephesians chapter 6, oops, I'm getting behind on my slide, sorry. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 18. It says, with all prayer and petition, pray at all times in the Spirit with this view and be on alert with all perseverance and petitions for all the saints. Notice, with all prayer and petition prayer. Pray. So you've got prayer and pray. The same basic word, but different forms being repeated. In Revelation, this is one that didn't translate real well. But in Revelation 17 and in verse 6, Revelation 17 and verse 6, it says, and I saw the woman drunk with blood of the saints and with blood of the witness of Christ. And when I saw her, I wondered greatly. That very last phrase, it literally says in the Greek, I wondered with a great wonder. Which doesn't sound quite right in English, but it's using wondered and wonder twice in a row, or twice at least in the same statement. And it puts extra emphasis on it. Now, another one that sometimes causes people a little bit of difficulty is hyperbole. That's when you exaggerate something to the extreme. Let's go take a look at 2 Samuel. Some in the Gospels as well, but decided to use the one in 2 Samuel. Trying to pick up some really clear ones that maybe you wouldn't normally notice. So 2 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 23. This is David's eulogy to Jonathan and Saul. It says, Saul and Jonathan, beloved and pleasant in their life, and in their death they were not parted. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. That's hyperbole. They're people. But he wants to emphasize their might. So yes, he's literally, that's stretching it too far. In a figure of speech, no, it helps emphasize his praise for them. And I'm looking at it and saying, if I keep going, I won't finish. Or we'll be late to getting out. So I think I'm going to pause here. There's another set, and it deals with changing what you expect. It says one leaves out words, one adds words, and another set changes words. in some way or shape or form. So we'll, Lord willing, when I get back, we'll try talking about that as well. I hope this will be at least a little bit interesting to you. The emphasis here was basically, like I said, we need to know this type of thing because we deal with talking to people who are outside of Christ. We talk to people who want to promote false doctrine. And sometimes they'll catch you off guard because they'll take something that was figurative, use it as if it was literal, take something that's literal, use it as if it's figurative, change meaning of words and things like that. And we need to just know here, this is not arbitrary. There are real meanings, and we can see them. We can understand what they are. And like I said, we all do use it. We all do it all the time in our languages. We just don't think about it. We just say it, because that's the way we've heard it all the time. I hope you think about these things. If there's anyone here, though, today who's not yet a child of God, there is no better time than right now to put on Christ. For those of you who are children of God and would like the prayers of your brethren on your behalf, again, we leave that opportunity. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song of the selected.